You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Fast ship. Never heard of a plenty of fault.
Should I have?
It's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
What a piece of junk.
Covering Star Wars vehicles in less than 12 parsecs, this is Start Your Engines.
Don't get technical with me.
Here are your hosts, Paul Naylor and Mark Newbold.
You're listening to Start Your Engines. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who would happily be my co-pilot in a pod racer, except they only fit one person. It's Paul Naylor. Paul, how you doing?
I don't think they'd fit you on your own, would they?
Probably not. If he was, it wouldn't be doing 600 miles an hour.
Why have I now... I'm suddenly now imagining, you know these coin-operated things outside supermarkets? That would be like you in a pod racer.
Anyway.
Hello.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Paul. So today we're going to talk about Anakin Skywalker's Raiden Alza Podracer. It's the vehicle that you saw in The Phantom Menace. The ship that he built himself. It's very, very fast. When Phantom Menace came out, I mean, we've talked about it a lot on the site. It's the 25th anniversary of Phantom. It's very much at the forefront of our minds, and it's back in cinemas very, very soon. What are your first recollections and memories of seeing Anakin's Podracer?
Yeah. I mean, it first of all, it's crazy to think Phantom Menace was 25 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah, I mean, dare I say it, my first recollections other than the trailer, where we did get a reasonably good look at the Podracer, my first real recollections of it are when I managed to get my hands on a pirate copy of The Phantom Menace back in the day.
I mean, of course, that's terrible.
Yeah, terrible thing.
But very cool.
So this would have been sort of March time, probably of 99.
Well, there was that famous leak, wasn't there?
Yeah.
That was doing the rounds.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, somebody had transferred it to VHS for me. And probably like anybody else that saw it for the first time, probably thought, this can't be the real film. there's things about this that don't hold true. But I do remember on the version that I'd gotten, I'm not sure whether it was the same for everybody else, but when you got to the pod racing scene, I don't recall there being a music soundtrack, and that the engines were really grunting and really foreground, and it made it quite epic. We all know George Lucas is a massive fan of motorsport. He's a big petrol head, yeah. And because of that, it was inevitable at some point we were going to get some form of motorsport into a Star Wars production. Yeah, I love the fact that it's centered around Boonta-Reeve. We've got Jabba there spitting out frogs onto gongs to start the race off. It was brilliant. I mean, we all knew the outcome. We knew that he was going to win. But the fact that they made it look like he wasn't going to win, and there was a lot of trepidation about it, was absolutely brilliant. But aesthetically as well, what did you think when you first saw a pod racer and thought, I like the fact that the engines are at the front?
Yeah.
How is this all going to work?
It was fascinating because when you look back to Return of the Jedi, we'd had the speeder bikes.
Mm.
So, you know, in A New Hope, we'd had land speeders. In Empire Strikes Back, we had snow speeders.
Yeah.
A bit more aerial, not very big, but similar kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Jedi, you get the speeder bike, which is Kawasaki's, Suzuki's, fast bikes. And then you get to Phantom Menace, and you know a speeder bike can move, and it's nipping through the trees. A pod racer probably couldn't nip through the trees like a speeder bike could, but that thing's doing 600 miles an hour. That's going at crazy speeds. So when we saw it, it had that hot rod feel. It had that vibe about it. And of course, you know, you get to episode 2, and in Attack of the Clones, Anakin picks that bright yellow speeder because he likes the look of it. And it's got that American Graffiti hot rod feel.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
and
about that.
This is definitely that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely George translating or sort of laying on that love of speed that he's got, which is amazing when you think it nearly ended him. And just everything about it, the grit and the sand and the views that you saw of Mos Espa, you know, going into Beggar's Canyon, all the stuff that we'd heard
about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All the little things that had been mentioned, and they put it into place. And of course, we saw it recently in The Mandalorian.
Yes.
When he gets the N1 and he goes belting down Beggar's Canyon, which was
a lovely nod to The Phantom Menace. Yeah.
It really was. And seeing up Mushroom Mesa and all the stuff that you saw. And also, Phantom was, I've said this the last 25 years, Phantom was robbed at the Oscars. Beyond doubt, bullet time from The Matrix was fascinating and brilliant, not compared to what they did in Phantom Menace. But when you look at the pod race from a visual effects and design point of view and performance, because Jake's fantastic in the moment, you know, when he's reeling Sebulba in, but also, as much for me as anything, it's the sound.
Yes.
Skywalker Sound just nailed it with those engines. And I used to have it on Japanese Laserdisc, and I had a mega setup at home, like big, sort of 3 foot tall, proper killer speakers.
Uh-huh.
And I would go down to mum and dad when I was living at home, just putting Phantom Menace on. I'm just going to put it on for a bit. Is that all right? Yeah, okay. Don't be too long. Okay. And I'd crank up the pod race and literally just like the house was shaking. The best was when I put Raiders on and the ball would come down and my dad would come running upstairs thinking the wardrobe had fallen over or something.
Do you know what? After we've recorded this, I'm going to go home and I'm going to be watching at least the pod race.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the key moments, isn't it? When you talk about Phantom Menace, you think the pod race, you think Maul versus Obi-Wan. And the triple threat, you know, the three of them be Qui-Gon, but really Maul and Obi-Wan after Qui-Gon's been taken down.
Yeah, definitely. Those are your two key scenes, really, aren't they, in the film? And I like the fact that we've now got an extended version of the pod race in the Phantom Menace version that's knocking around on Disney Plus, at least these days. A lot more talk about the different races, the different pilots, etc. But also, I think I'm right in saying that the actual race is a lot longer than
I think
the original
cut. Edit, the cinematic edit, that when it first came out, I think you probably saw two laps.
Yes.
But when you see the DVD Blu-ray version, it's been in there a while.
Yeah.
They gave you that extra lap, didn't they?
Yeah, it has been in there quite some time now. It's one of those things that you can watch over and over again because in each lap there's something of interest.
Yeah.
The fact that they suddenly drop in randomly, or a sing.
Yes.
You get to see some Jawas with the good old Utini.
Yeah.
And you've got Tusken Raiders shooting at the pod race as they go around.
Which again was picked up nicely in Book of Boba Fett and Mando, wasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Like George says, it's like poetry, it repeats. It's great how we can keep going backwards and forwards and referencing different films and TV productions. But yeah, for me, the pod racing scene, at first you question, can a kid this age really, A, have built this thing?
Yeah.
B, pilot it as well as he can.
Because no human's supposed to be able to do this.
No human's supposed to be able to do it. And C, win.
Yeah.
But clearly, Anakin is something special. We all know that. When you first saw it, what were your initial thoughts? Did you think this is going to be the pivotal part of the film? This is going to be a key part of it?
Well, I've got a funny relationship with Phantom on first viewing because when I first saw it, it was so alien and so not what I was used to from the original three and all the other stuff we'd lived with in the intervening years, like
Caravan of Courage.
Caravan of Courage and the George and Ewoks and, you know, and the Empire books and the games as well that we'd had in the intervening years, you know, TIE Fighter and all the other stuff that had come out in between the trilogies.
Yeah.
So it was a completely alien thing. Once I'd seen the film two or three times, just as a spectacle, and of course, a motor race, any motorsport, is supposed to be a spectacle.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a bash. It's supposed to be a standout moment. It's the first time you're really seeing, to any great degree, sports in Star Wars.
Yes.
And it's motorsports, which is throaty and noisy and dusty and loud. So that was fascinating to see. But I think, I think you realise pretty quickly that whilst there's lots of very cool sequences in Phantom Menace all the way through it, especially in retrospect and watching it even today, because things are being picked up on by Disney Plus shows and books and comics and stuff being pulled out that bring it to the forefront, it's really more clear than ever that those two sequences we mentioned, pod race and the lightsaber battle, are just right in your face. But the pod race, was that kind of became its own thing. You'd see pod racer t-shirts.
It was very much, but pod racer the game.
Yeah, episode one racer,
Yeah. So if it had been a TV series now, if it had been one of the Disney Plus series, it would have been an episode in its own right.
Oh, you could make a series out of pod racing.
Well, you could make a series out of it.
I mean, the game took you around the galaxy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Malastare
Do you think we'll ever see it again?
Pod racing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you kind of saw, I can't think what they called it in Bad Batch, but you saw that episode with the smaller kind of pod speeder type things.
Yes, that was in an earlier season.
It was season two, I think.
Yeah.
And that was great fun. And you did see some sort of speeder stuff in, I think it was Book of Boba, when you're looking down on Mos Espa, sort of scooting around the streets.
There was something, wasn't there?
I'm not going to say the bikes from Book of Boba Fett because they seem to, they think they're speed limited to about 30 miles an hour. Low speed chase. As good as the visuals were, that wasn't the fastest thing in the world. But I'd like to see it again. I mean, in storyline, they banned pod racing pretty soon after the events of episode one.
Yeah.
The logic being you didn't see any pod racing in the original trilogy, which is, I get the logic, but if you're looking broader than that, I mean, I was always the guy that was like, I don't like seeing A-Wings and B-Wings or the Shuttle Tidarium in eras before Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't seen them before then. But logically, there's cars that were made in the 50s I've not set my eyes on Earth. That doesn't mean they haven't been driving around for 70 years, does
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Just because we never saw it doesn't mean that it didn't exist.
Yeah. You know. So I think you could have had pod racing, but I get that if the Empire's clamping down on the galaxy that, you know, you might want to tick that one out.
Manufacturer.
So Anakin's pod racer, it was a Radon Ulza, manufactured by Radon Ulza. It was obviously a repulsor craft, modified by Anakin himself. So we see him in Watto's junkyard when Qui-Gon and Jar Jar and Padme arrive.
Yeah.
Padme, not Queen Amidala, of course, Padme, walk into Watto's junkyard. They're dealing with Watto, but you pretty quickly learn that Anakin is actually, he's the mechanic, he's the techie guy,
yeah,
and he's a nine-year-old kid. When you first saw Anakin, of course, it's a big adjustment. We know this kid. Even in 99, of course, we knew this kid is going to turn into Darth Vader.
Mm.
The ultra, you know, mega screen villain. It's him and Hannibal Lecter, isn't it? What were your thoughts when you first saw Anakin? Because quite clearly and very quickly, they make it obvious to the viewer that we know who he's going to be. He's a cute little blonde-haired mop top, yeah, and he's really good with a wrench. You know, what did you think of him when you first saw him?
Well, I'd seen Jake Lloyd in Jingle All the Way.
Yeah.
And I thought he was really good in that. Seeing him in The Phantom Menace, I don't think you fully appreciate how good he was.
Yeah.
He got a lot of criticism at the time, and we all know that he's had issues because of it. When you see the Anakin interviews, if you like, there's him and two other little kids,
yeah,
doing a reading.
Yeah.
He's head and shoulders above
these. Ahead, wasn't he?
Way, way ahead of them.
Yeah.
So he was definitely the right choice.
Yeah.
Personally, I think I would have had Anakin a bit older than he was, maybe 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
The choice was to use... How old was he meant to be? 9, 10?
9, yeah.
Yeah, 9. I never had any real issues with him as a character.
Yeah.
Like I say, as an actor, I think for his age, considering the environment that he was in,
yeah,
and what he's got to try and project to the screen, but also, to a certain extent, he's got to carry the film.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, we all loved Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn and Darth Maul and everything else, but let's make no bones about it. The story is the story of Anakin Skywalker. The whole prequels, they're there just to set up episode 4. Fine, absolutely fine with the character. The one thing I perhaps wouldn't have done would have been the typical American bowl cut, 9-year-old haircut.
Yeah.
You know,
which Luke's got in Obi-Wan Kenobi, yeah.
By the end of the film, when he gets his little spiky hairdo, his Jedi hairdo and his little braid,
yep,
great. That's
looks
what he
cool.
You should have had, like, spiky hair all the way through.
Because
I always had spiky hair when, yeah, I was a kid. Yeah. As a character, Jake did a great job. There was the correct chemistry, shall we say, between him and Padme.
Yeah. Who, she was only 14 herself.
Exactly,
so.
but I think because she looked older than that,
yeah,
I think it felt a little bit odd.
I think it's odd because you can't, you know where it goes, obviously,
yeah,
and when he's 10 years old, yeah, and he's 19 and she's 22,
it's
no
not
big
that
shakes,
different.
Is it?
No, yeah, no, exactly. It felt odd, but it didn't feel,
yeah,
icky.
Hello, this is Mark Thompson. I narrate a bunch of the Star Wars audiobooks, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
Do or do not. There is no try.
What were your thoughts on Jake and how Anakin was portrayed in one?
It was exactly what you said. It was a difficult thing to convey because George wanted him... Well, one, he wanted the film to be shown from a kid's point of view. He had young kids himself, so I guess that was a factor. And so having it be the young boy, the innocent... To see the downfall, you start with a kid who's a good kid. He's not a problem for his mom. He's lived in servitude. He's a slave.
He's optimistic.
And Watto, okay, Watto's got him as a slave. That is the society that they're living in. So it's easy to bash Watto. And he, yeah, certainly gets the rough end of the pineapple. By the time we get to Attack of the Clones, you don't see him in Sith. I never got the sense that Watto was a evil boss or a nasty boss.
No.
It's inferred that he was a hard boss.
Yeah.
But he lets the kid go home early after they've just done that. So there's little things like that,
yeah,
make you think, okay, he's living, he's not in the best scenario, but,
yeah,
he's making the best of the scenario that he's got. So having him be so technically good, I like the fact that Anakin is a fixer and he's a doer,
yeah,
and he's a dreamer, just like Luke. I mean, there's that beautiful scene, I keep flicking between shows, but that scene at the end of Obi-Wan Kenobi when Obi-Wan says to Leia, these qualities you get from your mother,
yeah,
because of course she knows she's adopted, these qualities you get from your father, and he's just had this monster battle with her father,
yeah,
and can't say any of who he is or what it is, but we know as a viewer, and it's such a sweet scene where he lays it out,
yeah,
and you have to assume, or I would assume, two things. One, Luke knows less than Leia knows,
yeah,
so he probably couldn't have that conversation with Luke, but if he did have that conversation with Luke and it was appropriate to do so in the same, mm-hmm, sort of way. Because it's always kind of felt like Luke was the chosen one. Luke's, the hopes are all pinned on Luke. And, mm, you realise actually it was just as much Leia. That you would have had a similar sort of outcome because you do see Luke in Anakin.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that they got a really good little actor. Because I think he was great. I think he was nuanced. And some kids just read like they're reading off a cue card.
Yeah.
Watch any British soap for bad child acting. And,
oh,
it's,
yes,
all over the television. Jake was not that. So
no.
Jake was really good. And again, he's playing the same character that Hayden's playing right up to the point when Mace Windu goes out the window and the Emperor says, you are now Darth Vader.
Yeah.
It's the same guy. It's just younger. It's a, you know, you're getting 2/3 of a trilogy more of that character that Jake kicks off with and Hayden picks up.
Yeah. No,
so
that's true.
It's there's a through line between those two characters, which is really well played.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Technical specifications.
It's 3.15 metres in length. That's the cockpit. In total, with the engines, 7 metres long. It's a big vehicle. Yeah. I mean, you put it on that Boonta Reef track. It's a big track. It's a wide track. You see them all on the starting line. You get all the droids come out and waving the flag and all that stuff, all the pomp and circumstance and ceremony of the...
George's love of Formula One.
Exactly. Clearly. It's all there. It's Boonta Reef. You know, everything but the girl in the hot pants dropping the flags for them to go, you know, which would have been kind of funny, especially if it had been a hut. But... what did you make of that? You know, you've got this all these vehicles on that start line ready to go.
Yeah.
There's a few false starts. Ben Quadraneros doesn't have the best start. There's a few things that go wrong. Odo Manjuel has trouble with his pit droids. But what did you make of that? When we're watching it in the cinema, you've never seen it before, and we're about to go.
I suppose I still am a fan of Formula One, but not the same as I was back then. I mean, those were like early Schumacher.
Yeah.
To me, it sort of like evoked Formula One.
Yeah.
And knowing George's love of Formula One. And in fact, do you remember when, I forget which film it was, I don't think it was Phantom Menace, I think it was Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
There was a Formula One race where the cars had
that's
the livery.
Right.
They had Star Wars
he
livery.
He turned up at Monaco, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't taken out of the film, but it just evoked Formula One to me.
Totally.
You know, you'd got your pit droids, you'd got, like you say, the flag bearers. It was all that sort of preamble to a race.
Yeah.
You got the lights, you got the sound, counting it
down. The pit crews. Yeah.
We actually saw people going into the pits, didn't we? And you'd got the fact that you'd got like a structured race. Yeah, it was just fantastic. I really did love the inclusion of Jabba.
Jabba in Phantom Menace, we had the special editions.
Yeah.
And bless them, it was the best they could do at the time with the visuals, technology that they'd got. But you look back and think, one, they should never have put that scene back in because it was just replicated and duplicated, even lines that were said in other parts of the film. Yeah. So it was completely redundant, but kind of cool that they did it. Really, not that long after at all, you see Jabba in The Phantom Menace, and he looks absolutely... it's the best version of Jabba we've ever got, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to the Book of Boba Fett, where we've got the twins, what they could do with Jabba now, obviously, based on what they did with those, would be amazing.
Yeah.
So I would love to see Jabba back.
Maximum atmospheric speed.
947 kilometres per hour. When Episode 1 Race of the Game came out, the whole thing was like 600 mile an hour. That was the number that they kept throwing out. I know we're talking clicks now rather than miles per hour, but nevertheless, 947 kilometres per hour at full tilt. There's a lot of starships that don't go that fast in atmosphere. So these things are like supersonic. Maximum altitude, 105 metres. You see that great scene, not long after you've seen Aurra Sing, I think, when he goes up the ramp.
And then it drops down.
And he's up in the air, and you look down at Sebulba, and he cuts the engines, and it goes silent for a minute, which I love.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about Attack of the Clones with Jango's bomb.
You can't beat that.
You can't beat that. But there's that silence, and then the noise, that horn.
Yeah.
It's the same in Phantom, when it goes completely silence, and you just hear Sebulba go, ooh, and as he sees him come down in front of him, and he clicks the engines back.
Yeah. Is that where he drops behind him, and then he finally gets the better of him? Or
I think Sebulba forces him onto the ramp.
Yes.
You hear the announcers sort of...
oh, forces him onto the off-ramp, doesn't
onto
he?
The off-ramp. And then he goes up in the air, does his gidgets and gizmos when he's in the air, and actually comes down in front of him and just throttles
it.
And that's where he gets the lead.
Yeah. It's a good part of that race. Although my favourite part is when he's having to start fiddling around with all his bits and bobs.
Yes.
And like you say...
and the music's so good.
Yeah, it's intense, and it's sort of like... he's having to do a proper bit of acting there, isn't he?
Proper.
You know, he's on his own. The direction is right. You've got bits and bobs falling off this left, right and centre. You've got to reconnect all these
plug
things
this into that
to get your power coupling to work properly. He did a cracking little job there. And when he finally does beat Sebulba, and Sebulba comes out spinning out of his and then he crosses the line.
Brilliant. It's beautifully played, it really is.
Engine specs.
The vehicle has two Radon Ulza 620C racing engines. We don't know anything about them other than they're on this pod racer. But of course, we do see this engine another time outside of Episode 1.
We do.
We see it in Chapter 9 of The Mandalorian, The Marshal, first episode of Season 2, when Cobb Vanth is riding it. It's a 620C racing engine. He sticks a seat on the top of it, turns it into a speeder, basically. But outside of that, and that was such a cool nod because we're on Tatooine, everything's it's the Cuba of the galaxy, isn't it?
It is.
Everything's rebuilt and fixed and bodged up and
repurposed.
Made to work, repurposed.
Yeah.
We don't see it outside of that, but like you say, without doubt, George makes it very... George, like I know him. George makes it very clear that as much through what you see as what you hear, this is a beast of an engine.
Oh, yeah. I think when we first saw that, we all thought, is that Anakin's engine?
Yeah.
He's riding on. It's like he's on some sort of Harley. Mind you, Cobb Vanth. If you were going to be a Star Wars character, that's the one to be, isn't it?
Walking around in Boba Fett's armour.
Yeah.
And you're Timothy Olyphant. It's a pretty cool place to be.
Yeah.
You mentioned the power couplings a moment ago.
Yeah.
Power couplings are very, very important, really, in Phantom Menace, because you've got these monster engines that, if not controlled and steered properly, would literally, and we see it with Ben Cucineros,
spin off,
would just go off on their own because there's so much oomph behind them. Jar Jar manages to get his snout caught up in a power coupling.
My tongue.
Exactly. And his hand's caught in. The only practical shot of Jar Jar in the whole film is the hand, the gloved hand in the engine. That's not CG. That's somebody with a glove on. So that is a key moment when you realise how powerful these couplings are. And then you realise how powerful they are by their emission when the one goes off, as you say, and the engines, one smashes into the wall, one races up into the air.
It's a bit like if you let go of a hose pipe, isn't it? It does its own thing. It snakes off all over the place.
Well, to me, it's the don't cross the streams thing from Ghostbusters, but in reverse.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to keep these things.
Do cross the streams.
If these are not crossed, you're buggered.
Technical specifications.
It has something called a boost meter. It's a component in the pod racer systems that are meant to control temporary increases in the speed of the vehicle. Because you're racing along at such speed and you're heading towards things that much faster. And as we said earlier, Anakin says, I'm the only human that can do it. Because we know he's got this Jedi sense, and Qui-Gon starts to lay it out for Shmi, even though you kind of sense that she kind of knows anyway. And the moment for Anakin to leave isn't, I wonder if he'll ever leave me. It's like, when's he going to go?
Yeah.
Because it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen.
Crew complement.
One pilot, so it's a crew of one. It's a racing craft, and it was built by Anakin from different parts. So in the same way that you could consider 3PO to be both 200 years old and also brand new in The Phantom Menace, this vehicle is essentially 32 years old.
Owners.
It was owned by Anakin, built and owned by Anakin. It was also owned at one point by Sebulba and then by Hakula, who was the son of Sebulba. So following in his father's footsteps, Hakula was a pod racer as well. He inherited Anakin's pod racer after Sebulba had purchased that pod racer from Qui-Gon Jinn.
And wow.
This is from Legends. Okay. So some of this may have changed.
With this.
I wasn't until I did a bit of research, but it's quite interesting that this vehicle, after Anakin leaves Tatooine with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Padme and everybody else, that the vehicle persists. I mean, doing a bit of Wikipedia looking, that vehicle that Cobb Vanth uses as a speeder, it doesn't say specifically that that was one of the engines from Anakin's pod racer.
It's one of that type, but it's not necessarily from that pod racer.
But you could certainly infer that it probably is, isn't it?
Yeah,
they're on the right. He's on the right side of the planet for that.
Well, it would be a nice conclusion to draw, wouldn't it?
It would.
Hakula, though, what a great name!
It is a good name. It's a cool name.
It is.
Hello, I'm Ahmed Best, and you're listening to Fenthatrax.
You look back at the pod race, it's exciting, it's thrilling, but also the vehicle tells you something about Anakin, that he's a fixer and he's a doer and he's a dreamer. He's very, very good at what he does, but also it tells you a lot about the characters as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think what it does is it explains, without delving into the Force, that he's got abilities. It shows that he's a switched-on kid. At 9 years old, he can do things that he probably shouldn't be able to do. A bit like Harry Potter. When Harry Potter suddenly finds out he's a wizard, he had no idea that he'd got this lineage because it'd been hidden from him. And it's a little bit like that with Anakin. He didn't know what it was about him that was special. It had to be sort of like laid out in front of him by Qui-Gon and Obi.
But that's a really nice comparison between Harry Potter and Anakin, for example. I think the difference between the two is that Harry, because he had no concept and no idea, he knew that that was his aunt and uncle, a bit like Luke knew that was his aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
But Luke never really had any moments to think, hey, maybe I'm the most powerful Force user in the galaxy. Mm. Things happened around him, but he'd never really instigated it to any great degree.
Yeah.
You met Luke early on and he'd got Biggs, who was a big deal, and Cammy and Fixer, who were like in their little world, were a big deal. And these are the characters were above Luke. He was the kid in that relationship. When you meet Harry, he's a lovely boy who's having a rough time with his aunt and uncle, who you realise are kind of protecting him.
Mm.
They're trying to protect him from this destiny that they know's probably out there for him. But Anakin, he don't lack confidence, does he?
No.
He's a confident little lad. He'll chat and talk to the cute girl who's just walked into his shop. He's there talking with Qui-Gon quite openly. He's not fazed by Jar Jar. He's probably never seen a Gungan before. And his mom, she's so cool and she's so calm. And they're well set as characters, aren't they? And so Anakin coming into this scenario, and he knows Qui-Gon's a Jedi because he's seen his laser sword. No, I'm the only human that can do it. He kind of knows he's a big deal. There's a bit of arrogance almost about him without being, you know, kids can be confident without being arrogant.
Yeah.
But when you get to Hayden's version of Anakin 10 years later, he is a little bit arrogant, isn't he?
Yes, definitely. The other thing that sprung to mind for me as well was, by the time we get to the Obi-Wan series, the age that we see Luke at isn't dissimilar to the age that we first encounter Anakin at.
Yeah, I think maybe a year or two in it.
Yeah.
At most.
And there's parallels. You've got young Luke there sat on the goggles
yeah.
on, pretending he's pod racing.
Yeah.
Probably got absolutely zero idea his father had ever done anything like that.
And especially because, as we said earlier, and it may change in current canon, depends on what they want to do with TV stuff, and it's fine if they do. But at that point on Tatooine, as far as we know, pod racing isn't an ongoing thing anyway. Yeah. It's been done away with.
So he probably got zero idea, young Luke. But I just thought that was a nice touch to sort of give him that similar age than when we first encountered the young Anakin. You could almost see them being mates.
You could, in a way. And it's nice that you've seen the youngest you'll probably ever see Padme. And I hope they do something with this. You've seen young Leia with Vivian. You've seen young Luke with Grant Feely. You've seen young Anakin with Jake.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice to see a young Amidala and see how she got to her situation at a similar age?
Yeah.
So it, just for the aesthetic of being able to put the four actors together at that age as a collage of family, if you like.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, you know? Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
just to see how they look. Because the youngest we'll probably ever see Padme is Natalie Portman.
Yeah. Because, I mean, going back to The Phantom Menace, were there not rumours? It might not have been Phantom Menace. No, it would have probably been Revenge of the Sith. There were rumours that we were going to get a young Han. Weren't we?
They'd planned it, they'd sketched it, it was all drawn up.
Yeah,
you were going to see young street rat.
It is nice to see these characters at the different ages. But yeah, I agree with you there. To be able to have that comparison imagery of them all around the Harry Potter age group, shall we say?
Yeah.
Would be quite cool.
We will reconvene very soon to get the engines revved up for the next episode. Thanks for listening to Start Your Engines. If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTrax.com and be sure to comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTrax. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTrax.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTrax intro and our Start Your Engines opening music, Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers, and of course, the data miners at Wikipedia. Remember to tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings at 9 o'clock UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern and 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook, YouTube and Twitch. And check out our FanthaTrax Radio Friday Night Rotation. It's every Friday night at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks, and every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks.
Coming up next on FanthaTrax Radio, it's Making Tracks.
Paul making up. He's gone. Paul making up his own jokes again.
Oh dear.